Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. We're on today's podcast number 14. It's Wednesday, July 20th, 2011. I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
And the music you just heard was Grenades. And you can check out their link on the BadQuaker.com website where this file is located. They're kind enough to let us use their music for intro and for exit. And they had a very successful two weekend, very successful gig at one of the local venues here. And they actually got played on the radio. So it's good for them, good for the guys at Grenades. They're up and coming local band, and we like to support them. They're supporting us. So today we wanted to cover a couple things. We're going to do an intro of each other, or we're going to explain who we are and get to know you a little bit better. And we also wanted to cover a listener question that came into us from one of our most faithful listeners. Also, a very faithful listener had the comment that our podcasts are not going long enough. He would prefer they be closer to an hour. So if you have any feedback on that topic, just drop us a line. I'm Ben, B-E-N, at badquaker.com, or Kai, K-I, at badquaker.com for Kai's email. If you're on the website at badquaker.com and you have any comments about the website itself, the admin is badquaker at badquaker.com. So we got that all out of the way.
Kai, now that the housekeeping is done.
Yeah. Kai, you want to tell us about yourself?
Sure.
Well, let me introduce you first. This is my daughter, Kai.
Hello. My name is Kai Vick, and I am kind of a born and bred anarchist, as opposed to some people who have come to the anarchy movement through, you know, first being a libertarian and learning more and more and finally deciding to be an anarchist. I was kind of always an anarchist, or as teachers and other type of people would say, I have a problem with authority. I have always kind of loved to point out hypocrisy and the state's dealings that are terribly, you know, evil. You always try to find a word that's not evil for the state, but
it's hard to find. Vocabulary is limited.
Evil really works well, mm-hmm. You know. You don't want to be that person who's all, the government's Satan, but, you know, the government is kind of Satan.
Yeah. Well, differentiate between government and state, though. That's a key. Government can be legitimate in the sense that if we were in a true free society and people said, I want my house protected, and so I'm willing to pay for a service to do that, and you call up Brinks or whoever, and when you can determine your government, and your government doesn't have the thumb of force on you, mm-hmm. then it's a legitimate government. If the government exists by the use of force against you and can extract taxes from you at will and regulates your life, then you serve the government and it is not a legitimate government, it is a state.
Yep.
If the government serves you and it is by your choice, voluntary by your choice, then the government can simply be the function of a contract. Now, right away, people say, this is kind of off the subject of who is Kai, but right away people say, well, we have a contract with our government in the U.S. We have a constitution. That's not a contract. Nobody signed that. Mm-hmm. It's a piece of paper that some statists agreed to a couple hundred years ago. I didn't agree to it, and I don't have a choice about it. Mm-hmm. I can't say, I no longer want this government, I would like a different government.
Right.
If I do that, they'll arrest me for treason if I actually take action on that.
Yep.
So that means we don't have a legitimate government, we have a state, and the state is evil. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's my preaching for today.
So, yes, I've always, growing up, it was always very clear to me to say, you know, this is illegitimate, and so I've always kind of had my eyes open to that. As far as kind of my history, I basically am a hippie, I guess. I spent quite a fair amount of time wandering around the country working at Renaissance festivals, and kind of not being a real citizen.
A tax-paying citizen?
Yeah, kind of just being a transient homeless person, you know.
And you say that in a positive way.
It is. It's people don't understand how very easy it is to just disappear from the system altogether. Mm-hmm. and not, you know, it's hard not to pay taxes. You will always pay taxes in some way or another.
Right, you have to buy gas, you have to buy food, you have to transport from one place to another.
Right. But it's very easy to not be on the radar,
mm-hmm.
To not have, you know, your movements tracked or your income tracked or anything like that. You know, not that I'm saying you should commit tax fraud. Not saying that, and I'm not saying I committed tax fraud. I'm just saying it's very easy not to have an income.
We at BadQuaker.com do not endorse or approve.
You know, and if any IRS agents are listening, you know, I have always paid the correct amount of tax.
Okay.
But, you know, the point being that I was always kind of moving around and looking at small business, and because with the Ren Faires, you see small business in action. You see, you know, individuals running a business that consists of only themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you see voluntary contracts. You see people making contracts to work for other people without the force of the state being involved. You know, there aren't really minimum wage laws that apply. There aren't really child labor laws that apply. You know, you see 6-7-year-old kids who are running errands, making money. You know, I know Rennie kids who have made enough money just running drinks back and forth to people,
mm-hmm.
that they've saved up and bought laptops, that they've bought, you know, really nice things.
Mm-hmm.
And it teaches them the fundamentals of capitalism at an early age. And I think that, you know, making children not work is it's really a disservice to those children.
Yeah, it's unfair to the kids. Because it gives them a false sense of what the world is like, and then they get to be 18, 20, 22, whatever, when they get out of school, and then they get slapped in the face with, okay, now, this is what the real world is like.
Yeah.
We were lying to you for the last 20 years. Here's what the real world is like.
And, you know, nobody forces those kids to work.
Mm-hmm.
Those kids go out, and they find the work, mm-hmm. and they make connections, and they talk to people, and they run around all day asking if you will hire them and asking if you will give them work.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's forcing them to.
Right.
You know, nobody says you have to go out and do this. The parents don't say that.
But the opportunity is there, and they take advantage of that opportunity, and they provide services that adults don't want to do.
Right.
You know, and they will do those things and pick up some spare change in doing it.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the whole Rennie culture goes, now there are a lot of what might be called campgrounds, but in cases it's not really a campground. It's not a communal situation, because it's not communist. It's very market based. Even mm-hmm. if the people there don't realize that they're in a free market,
mm-hmm.
it very much is a free market security, free market, you know, in a lot of ways. What's it like in the campgrounds? Is there food and services sold back and forth among the Rennies themselves?
Often. A lot of times you'll have a Rennie who puts together like a camp kitchen, They'll have, you know, a refrigerator or a cooler full of sodas, or they'll have, you know, sandwiches and stuff like that. And they'll have it out, and, you know, you come and you put money in, like, the can or the jar if they're not there, and you take the food. And it's very honor-based because people are generally honorable.
And there's... if someone is found in that community to not be honorable,
right,
there's a method of taking care of that.
And it's not, it's actually, it's really funny because you don't, you know, there's no system of enforcing and there's no police and whatever within the community.
Mm-hmm.
What there is kind of an old world sense of if you mess up and if you're a bad person and if you harm other people within the society, then you're just shunned.
Yeah, you're out.
You know, you're not, nobody's going to come in and forcibly attack you. Nobody's going to do anything like that, but you're not going to find work.
Right.
You know, nobody's going
to... Word will spread.
Nobody's going to give you opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you will be forced out of the culture
mm-hmm.
because you don't have that trust anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a very effective way of dealing with people.
Now, that used to be the community way of dealing with everything mm-hmm. in every community.
Mm-hmm.
Some communities would have a constable, but the purpose of the constable was not to, you know, enforce law.
Right.
The purpose of the constable was pretty much to keep communications going among everybody mm-hmm. so that everybody knew what was going on and who was doing what. And
we have, you know, there are members of the community who are kind of older and well-respected, and they do have a sense of leadership mm-hmm. in that, you know, if a fight breaks out or something, they will go break it up and mm-hmm. kind of
settle.
work to settle the argument mm-hmm. or if there is...
Act as an arbitrator to,
right.
to settle whatever grievance that has caused this.
Right. And, you know, it's kind of funny because there are, you know, a lot of... Even if there isn't, say, a camp kitchen where it's open all week,
mm-hmm.
There are what we call the bazaar bazaars, mm-hmm. which are basically like flea markets or garage sales
mm-hmm.
that happen on Monday mornings, and you know somebody's generally there making breakfast, and you can come order breakfast and pay for it, and you know people have blankets spread out, and they have you know, these jeans don't fit anymore, I'll sell them to you for $5.
Now there are government inspectors there making sure that everything is thoroughly inspected.
Of course. You know, we've got people there, you know, who are doing pedicures and massages and henna, and you know, and it's just nobody is enforcing pricing structures or anything like that. It's just open market, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it all cash based, or is it also is there barter?
There is a lot of barter that takes place. Not so much within the campground stores themselves, but especially during the fair within the Rennies, because,
yeah.
you know, if I want, say, a pair of boots,
mm-hmm.
well, I don't make a lot of money as a Rennie,
right.
you know, and those boots are really expensive.
Right.
But I make, you know, let's say I make these shirts. Well, if I can talk to the person who's making the boots and they need shirts,
mm-hmm.
you know, we can work it out to where we both get something we need and we don't have to pay cash.
Yeah. I think a lot more of that goes on in the general public than most people realize. If you ever have the opportunity, or if any of the listeners ever have the opportunity to be around a radio station, now it's been a while since, you know, maybe this doesn't happen anymore, but... So I can only speak of what I knew was taking place back in the 80s and the early 90s, but I can't imagine anything happening that would change this.
Right.
Anyway, back in the day, let's say the local radio station, the DJ at the local radio station wanted lunch. Well, he'd be more than happy to say, hey, look at this. My pizza just arrived from, you know, Jimbo's Pizza or whatever. And here's Leon from Jimbo's Pizza, and he's got my, oh, this is a delicious pizza. Mm-hmm. And he just got a free pizza.
Yep.
And Jimbo's Pizza just got a free shout out.
Yep.
And this is a give and take thing that it used to be anyway. It was very common in radio. And it's super common, or it was, in the restaurant industry.
Yep.
Late night, it's 11:30, most of your customers are starting to thin out. You've got a whole crew of people that have just really worked hard that Friday night, and you call up the let's say you're running the Pizza Hut, you call up Red Lobster and you go, hey, you know, because you know the guy at Red Lobster. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of knowledge among these different managers of these different businesses. And so the manager of the Pizza Hut calls up the manager of the Red Lobster and goes, hey, you guys feel like pizza tonight? And he's like, sure, how many? And so you literally swap pizza for lobster dinners, mm-hmm. you know, and you feed his crew and he feeds your crew. Or it might be, you know, you call up Wendy's and you know the guy at Wendy's and today we feel like having some Wendy's. And so there's this whole subculture of barter that's going on that oftentimes, especially on the company level with like the brand names that I just mentioned, mm-hmm. if the upper people, district supervisors and so forth, if they catch word of that, people get fired.
Oh yeah.
But on the working level, on the managerial level, and on the individual worker level, you can't stop this.
Oh no.
This is something that is so natural to humans that if you work with it, then everybody profits by it, including the businesses.
And a lot of it's kind of funny with Rennie's, a lot of the time that bartering amount is worked into your pay.
Yeah.
So instead of saying, you know, I'm going to pay you $75 a day, mm-hmm. you say, I'm going to pay you $50 a day and $25 in merchandise.
Yeah.
Now, that $25 in merchandise costs you $5 in merchandise.
Right.
But the person who's working for you gets $25.
Right.
For you paying the same amount that you would.
So both people profit by this deal.
Right. And it, you know, I may be working for a clothing company, and I may have all the clothing that I could possibly need.
Right.
But if I take that $25, I can then use that to, barter for something else. Mm-hmm. And it works out to the benefit of the customer as well, because that $25 in merchandise, mm-hmm. I can also use as
an incentive right,
to the customer.
During a sale.
You know, I can say, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. If you buy this mm-hmm. $150 item, mm-hmm. I'll throw in this $15 item for free.
Right. Now,
that'll make a sale, and I'll make more commission than that $15.
Yeah. This is the difference between an actual free market and the not free market that we're accustomed to when you walk into a major mm-hmm. supermarket or whatever. Try walking into a super Walmart and negotiating with the manager over jeans and a shirt.
Right. You can't do it.
He's not even going to understand that you're trying to. He's going to think you're trying to rip him off and say he's the mentality is so separated from a true market
yep.
that they won't even know what's happening.
Which is funny because if you go to other countries
yeah.
and you go to their actual, like, open air markets,
that's the way natural business takes place.
And they get, like, the locals will get really mad at you if you don't barter.
Yeah.
Because
it's insulting.
You have to barter. You know, if you don't barter, then those salesmen mm-hmm. are going to get used to not bartering, and
yep.
then they're not going to want to barter with the locals.
Yeah.
And so you're really going to make the locals mad if you don't barter.
Yeah. So you spent time with the Renaissance.
Yes. Traveling around, being a hippie.
Not a carny.
Not a carny. Not a carny. A Rennie.
I wonder if carnies go, we're not Rennies, we're carnies.
I don't know. It's possible. But it's a really great lifestyle if you're young, if you're in your early 20s, you know, and you don't have a lot of material needs.
Or I would imagine it would be good for an older couple where the children have all grown up and left, and they have their own motorhome or whatever.
We get a lot of people. There's two different groups of people on the Renfrew circuit. There are the young, early 20s, late teenage, you know, kicking around the country, being a hippie.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the retired people
mm-hmm.
who have a steady income from their retirement and who are doing this to make extra income
and see the, and country, see the country and relax. And they generally like people.
Right. Because you work 2 to 3 days a week mm-hmm. and then you get the rest of the week off.
Yeah.
And you're all over the country. So, you know, you can go see sites and be kind of a tourist, you know, all over the country. And mm-hmm. you can kind of set, you know, I want to do this fair here. I want to do this fair here. Mm-hmm. I want to go see this fair. So it's really nice because mm-hmm. it kind of pays for you to go around the country and sightsee.
So is that completely in your past now, or?
Well, I think so because, you know, I'm married now and my husband really does not approve of the entire idea of living in a tent, which I can understand. You know, it's a lot easier to live in a tent when you're, you know, 19 than it is when you're mm-hmm. a lot older.
Every year hurts a little bit more.
It does. It does. You know, when you crawl out of your tent, it ages you quicker than pretty much anything else. That's kind of the funny part is a lot of people say, oh, you get to dress up and it's the most physical job I've ever had because, mm-hmm. you know, you're putting up 100-pound canvas tents
mm-hmm.
A lot of times in, like, 20, 30-mile-an-hour winds, which is really kind of the equivalent of going kite surfing. you know, and you're carrying around bins of products, and that's fine when I'm selling feathers, but that's a lot more difficult when I'm selling pottery,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's a very physical lifestyle, but it's fun. It's not the kind of lifestyle. A lot of people do raise their kids on the road, but it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to do that, especially since it's really hard to make a decent income on the road.
Yeah, you can support yourself, but to really make a kind of living that it takes for a family is rough.
Yeah, so we have decided that we're gonna kind of try to stick, you know, to the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So we're off the road, you know, at least for the moment.
Yeah.
You know, I don't ever want to say what the future holds, but
right.
for the moment we are off the road.
At the moment, your husband has a great job. And you're in a solid community and moving in that direction.
Yes.
So I guess my turn, huh?
And mine was that long, and you have, what, 2.5 times my life experience to talk about?
Well, I'll just do a real brief, because I could take up, you know, I could take up a couple hour podcast just on the 80s, but... or the 70s, or the 60s. much like Kai's childhood and through her Renaissance years.
Oh, yeah, because I forgot to talk about that. I forgot to talk about how the fact that, you know, traveling around as a Rennie was not much different than my childhood.
Yeah, we did a lot of moving around. We were very... Not really. I started to say migratory. We weren't migratory.
Mm-mm.
We would just randomly go, hey, we're moving, and let's go, get everything,
mm-hmm.
and off we go. Situations would change, employment would change, the weather would change, and we're getting out of town.
Yep.
Time to leave Dodge. And we would go, and we would leave whatever we couldn't haul, and we would haul what we could haul. We took off our first trip across country. Do you have, what's your memory of that?
Was
do you
that
have
the train?
Oh, well, yeah, that would have been the first trip. I wasn't thinking about that. The train trip was pretty spectacular. Mm-hmm. But
the
do
first
you remember?
Move across the
yeah,
country.
When we had the two pickup trucks.
Yeah, and the camper.
Yeah. We had two older pickup trucks, One pickup truck had a camper that was not, that didn't fit that pickup truck. I picked up the camper for like $70 and it didn't fit that pickup, so I had to build a wooden frame that held the camper into the pickup truck. And then the other pickup truck that we had a spare pickup truck bed turned upside down as the shell, like a camper shell, and then all of our stuff was packed into that. And then we had a tow bar on the front of that truck so that if we needed to, we could tow one truck with the other. And if we needed to, we could even switch the tow bar between trucks if one of the two had a problem or whatever.
Right.
We took off from California that way.
This is kind of the reverse of the whole Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah, it was very Wraths of Grapes. It was like Grapes of Wrath leaving California, going back to well, at that time it was we came back to Ohio,
mm-hmm.
But we were quite the sight. I was concerned about the tires because all the tires on both trucks were used tires. And we knew that we had no money to buy more tires along the way. And the highway can be... And our trucks were both loaded pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom was driving one, I was driving the other. And so I spent a few months going to junkyards and gathering up spare tires mounted on wheels.
Mm-hmm.
So the truck that had the extra truck bed turned upside down on it as a camper shell... We also had strapped to the top of that, it must have been about 10 or 12 tires and wheels as spares, you know, mounted tires.
And a rocking chair tied to the top of that.
Now, that's not true. And Granny up there with her shotgun smoking a pipe. It wasn't quite that bad. But we got some laughs and we got a lot of looks. People thought it was pretty funny. But, you know... It was like, well, this is what we had to do.
Mm-hmm.
We had to get out of California. There was no second choice. We had spent, I guess about 8 months preparing for that trip where I was just doing odd jobs, working anything that I could do. That meant farm labor. That meant yard work for people. We were going out. My son and I would take 5 gallon buckets out to old gold mines, abandoned gold mines in the Mojave Desert in California. And we would scoop up 5 gallon buckets. We took shovel and 5 gallon buckets in the pickup truck. And we would get a bunch of 5 gallon buckets full of trailings, of sand and trailings from the mouth of gold mines. And then we would take it into our backyard and pan it. And we had a sluice box, Yeah, anyway, and we would process the sand and the trailings and get out what little bit of gold we could.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we would take the pickup truck and just drive out in the desert, and there's a lot of abandoned cars and junk spots where people have just spontaneously turned a spot into a dump where they just dump things, refrigerators or whatever out there. And so we would go out in the desert with our pickup truck and drive around till we'd find places like that, and then take the scrap metal off of those and bring it in for recycling.
Mm-hmm.
This was, I guess, early 90s. Is that about right? And by doing this, over the course of those months, we were able to scrape together enough of everything, of supplies and everything, to get us across country with our caravan. The youngest, Hannah, was very small,
mm-hmm.
Still in diapers, in car seat, and that was a full-time job for your mom, just trying to, you know, take care of her while all the rest of us were doing what we could.
Mm-hmm.
But that was fun times. So,
which is interesting because that is not the weirdest caravan I've seen driving across country. Rennie's have a tendency to kind of cobble things together, too.
Uh-huh.
It's very interesting to see some of the contraptions that they come up with.
On a different bug out type situation that we were in, we left our home in Reno and piled what we could into a pickup truck with a camper and At first, we basically camped around in Nevada for a few months, mm-hmm. and then worked our way up to Idaho and camped around in Idaho. And
it's a lot easier to do that out west than it is back east, because yeah. there's not really any BLM land out east.
Back east, yeah.
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 It's, you know, out in the desert, you can find just tracts of land where you can set up camp for a couple of nights.
Yeah.
There's really not any open property like that.
Yeah. Let's tell the horse story real quick.
I love the horse story.
We found a quarry out in the middle of the desert, and it was an abandoned quarry. They had stopped working it, and we thought, oh, this is a good place to set up a camp. We could maybe stay a few nights here. But then we got to looking at it, and it appeared as though the quarry was maybe a local party spot for people that wanted to come out and drink beer and perhaps even shoot guns, because there was a lot of spent cartridges laying around in the quarry. So we thought, okay, well, we'll just go back in the desert off near there, but far enough away to where we, you know. So we followed a road back through the desert, and it kind of turned into where it wasn't a road. It was more like a trail. And then we found a big open spot. Mm-hmm. And so we parked the truck there in the open spot in the middle of the
desert.
And
we thought, you know, yay, we've really hit, you know, gold here, because it was a nice flat area.
Yeah.
It didn't have any, the bush or anything growing on
scrub.
It. It didn't have any horse manure on it.
Yeah, that was the one spot with no, the rocks had been all pushed back, and there was no scrub brush, there was no chrysoprase bushes, there was no horse manure. It was a nice, big, open area, about probably 2.5-3 times bigger than our pickup truck was. So we were thrilled to find this. Mm-hmm. It was like the perfect camp spot. And we parked the truck there and got it at the right angle so it could block the wind. We got out our tents. Do we have 2 or 3 tents? I think we had 2.
We had 2.
2 tents plus the camper. Mm-hmm. And so in the heat, the tents are better than the camper, because mm-hmm. you know, it's cooler at night. So we got our tents all out there and everything, and the sun was going down. It's starting to get dusk. And what happened?
And all of a sudden, we realize we're surrounded by wild Mustangs looking at us like, hey, you're in our bedroom.
We had inadvertently found the spot that a whole herd of wild Mustangs had cleared out, and it was their wallow, and it was their bed mm-hmm. spot where they slept.
Which, it would very much be, to them, it would be like you waking up and seeing a whole herd of Mustangs in your bedroom.
Yeah.
Like,
and they weren't afraid of us. They were a little put out. One of the mares... They were annoyed at us. There was some pawing on the ground. One of the mares didn't really recognize what was going on, I think, and she just walked her colt right between our tents and the truck. Mm-hmm. And we're just sitting there watching what's going on. A reaction from us wasn't necessary and probably wouldn't have been a good idea.
Right.
But they wandered past us, and then there was we sat there and watched while another herd that was a little bit smaller herd moved up from a different direction.
And you could tell it was a young male that had split off from that herd and just taken a couple females with him.
Yeah, and then the main male from the bigger herd decided that he was going to take back over and take the mares back. And so we got to watch totally wild Mustangs in a herding, you know, in a wild herd situation like that, where the conflict between the old leader and the new leader. It was pretty spectacular. Mm-hmm. And remember the alpha female from the main herd got tough with the alpha female from the lesser herd.
Yep.
And then they ended up, you know, moving on, and I guess they probably had an alternative spot, I hope.
I hope so.
That was quite an unusual. We were on the road for a lot of months before we finally settled back down into Ohio.
It's interesting the kind of adventures that you can have if you're willing to put aside a little bit of discomfort.
Yeah.
And really look for the positives in whatever situation you're in.
Yeah.
You know, it's it would have been very easy to be in that situation and be miserable about the fact that we were in such a rough situation.
Yeah.
But instead, you know, you take it and you go, okay, this is an opportunity to go have these adventures.
Yeah, and it was. We were, you know, we didn't have much luck fishing, but we were feeding ourselves by frog gigging.
Frog gigging, though.
Yeah, frog gigging. And you can appreciate eating frog legs a lot more than if you go to a restaurant where it's a novelty item on the menu and, mm-hmm. oh, look at me, I'm eating frog legs. But if you actually go and in the middle of the night and you take your gigs and if you get a batch of frogs and bring them back and clean them and cook them right there in the campground, you really have an appreciation for that that's beyond anything you can gain in a restaurant.
Yep.
And they were good. But I don't think we lost any weight during that time. You know, we ate.
We ate
a lot of beef ribs.
Yep.
Because beef ribs are cheap.
And, you know, there's a lot of camp food that you can make that is cheap.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Potatoes and...
And we had a lot of stuff stored up, too, before we started on that.
Right.
So we were able to always have things in reserve that we carried with us. And water. Lots of water. You never want to be anywhere out west without a good supply of water.
Yep. And it's one of those situations where you have to weigh taking, you know, we only had the truck that we could deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go, do you take this space and pack more food in it, or do you put more personal belongings?
Right.
And growing up that way, mm-hmm. You have an appreciation for being able to buy things.
Right.
But you don't ever get emotionally attached to those things. If you need to leave them, mm-hmm. it's not going to break your heart. You can do that,
right.
You know, with the knowledge that you can always buy more stuff.
And you also have sort of a internal sense of what to grab now and take and mm-hmm. what to forget about and leave behind.
Yep.
We've almost used our whole time, and we didn't touch on our listener question. We should probably squeeze that in. I'm gonna read parts of this question, but I won't read all of it because I don't want to reveal exactly who the person is or who the department or agency that or what the items are that involved the question. So basically, we have a listener that works in a particular branch of the supply chain of a variety of items, and he was very enthusiastic that he got a request, a very large request that he could make a good amount of money off of. And then he began looking at it, and he realized it was for the DEA, for the Drug Enforcement Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a specific branch of the DEA that, I don't know if you can say, you know, we're going back to the devil, you know. If you look at the devil and you say, well, this demon that works for the devil is nastier than this demon that works for the devil. Well, I don't know how you make that distinction.
Right.
Are there degrees of evil, or is evil just, you know. So it's hard to say, well, this part of the DEA is particularly bad, but that particular part of the DEA is not good people.
Right.
Well, I shouldn't say people. I should say the result of what that branch of the DEA does is very bad.
Right.
Anyway, so now he's torn. He's a very moral person. He has a very high moral standard, but he has a commitment to his family to do business.
Right.
And here is the opportunity to do business and make some money for his family, but at the same time he's going to be supporting a branch of the government that's particularly hideous.
Right.
And so he's faced with this moral dilemma. What do I do about this? Now, my take on this is, you know, it's kind of twofold. We look at it like this, or I look at it like this. If whatever the government can steal from you, it will. Whatever the state can steal from you, it will.
Mm-hmm.
If you have 100 of whatever, and the state figures out that it can steal 99 from you, it will steal 99. If the state determines that if it steals 26, but you'll fight back at 27, it'll steal 26,
mm-hmm.
maybe 26 and a half,
mm-hmm.
maybe 26 and three quarters.
Right.
but it won't cross over that 27. So the state is going to take everything it can take from you and everybody else.
Right.
Now, if you can get something back from the state in a moral fashion, in other words, you're not deceiving them, you're not deceiving any individual, mm-hmm. you are not committing an act of aggression against any individual, then every penny, every nickel, every bit that we can take back from the state to support our families is simply what we're taking back honestly from the thief.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a moral problem on that level. Additionally, if you're supplying a product to the state, and the state, if you choose not to supply that product to the state, they'll just get it from somebody else.
Right.
Well, that means somebody else is going to make that profit and not your family.
Right.
You know? So, you know, for me personally, you could say, well, Ben, you're just justifying your actions because you worked for the Defense Department. You worked in the defense industry. You worked in the aerospace industry. You worked for NASA. You worked for these companies that were making weapons to be used in battlefields. And, you know, well, yeah, maybe that's the case. Maybe my mind is twisted on it because I try to justify my background.
Right.
But on the other hand, if there was never Ben Stone, no aspect of what I did would have not gotten done.
Right.
There would have been somebody else. And there's nothing so unique about me that job wouldn't have been done.
Right.
It's just that I was able to take some money away from the state and feed my family with it that could have gone to somebody else and fed their families.
Right.
And in that same vein, and Kai and I were talking about this, if you were the type of a person who was supplying a product or a service that was so unique that the state couldn't get it from anybody else,
mm-hmm.
let's say it's 1942, and you hold the absolute secret to a nuclear bomb,
mm-hmm.
and they can't produce it without you, then for you to give your all to give that technology to the state, well, now you've got a moral question that's a little more difficult to answer. But if you're just you're just a guy who's working on the roads, and if the state's not paying you to pave that road, they'll pay somebody else. Or if you're selling hammers to the state that they're going to use to build a prison that's going to put people in jail that have never committed violence against anyone, well, what they do with that hammer is not your responsibility.
Right.
You're just selling them a hammer. You're not aggressing upon anyone.
Right.
And so the same with selling something to the DEA. You don't have to approve of their actions with it. And if you don't sell it to them, somebody else will.
Right.
So that, anyway, that's the way I look at it. Kai might have a different view on that.
I have a conflicted opinion. On the one hand, the particular product that he's making is a product that is not...
It's not offensive, it's defensive?
Yes, it's not offensive, it's defensive. Yeah.
It's actually protecting agents.
Right. So in that way, you're not violating the non-aggressive principle to make that product and sell it. And so I don't have an issue with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it were something that was used aggressively, I think I would have an issue with it. I don't think that I would be able to judge someone else for taking that money from the state and, taking the job.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think I could do it.
Yeah.
I think if somebody comes to me and says, "Can you make this hammer? I want to go murder my neighbor with it."
Mm-hmm.
I can't make the hammer for them.
Right. That would make you an accomplice.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know,
But just the manufacturer of hammers that could be used to kill somebody with.
Right. I don't have an issue with that.
Right.
Because anything can be used to promote aggression. know.
Well, Marines say that a Marine can kill with a canteen cover.
Right. You know, I could make ice cubes for a living, you know, and somebody could figure out some way to violate the non-aggression principle with that.
Yeah.
You know, and that is not on my conscience.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody comes to me specifically and says, I need this to follow through with these plans, if I supply that, then I am supplying my permission for those plans.
Mm.
So I think there is kind of a difference there, you know, but if it's not actually being used aggressively, if it's something to where you're just making something to protect someone while they do an aggressive job, I think that falls into an area where it's not so morally reprehensible.
Well, each individual is responsible for themselves, so if you make a particular item for a DEA agent and then the DEA agent aggresses upon someone, then the action is the DEA agent's.
Right.
This goes back to, you know, the question, am I my brother's keeper? No, right. My brother's his keeper. I'm my keeper.
Right.
You know, what he does is his business. What I do is my business.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're pretty close in agreement on that. If we're not an actual accomplice to an aggressive act, then it's not a problem.
Right.
Even though we might be disgusted with what the DEA does, and especially the way that they distort the economies of small foreign countries and the level of poverty that they force upon poorer countries, in spite of all that, selling the DEA something that's common on the market and they can get otherwise and is not necessarily, we don't necessarily know of them specifically having that product for the purpose of, you know.
I think it's the difference between, you know, saying, I want to buy from you these specific boots to outfit the DEA with, or I want to buy these specific hats or these specific coats, as opposed to I want you to manufacture this specific caliber of rifle so that we can assassinate someone at this range, you know. That, I think, or, moves into the realm of you're an accomplice.
Yeah, or will you produce this particular torture device for us so that we can extract information from prisoners, something along that lines. That would be a different situation.
Right.
Okay, well, we've done halfway between fulfilling the request to make it an hour and staying with our 30 minutes. We're hitting in at about a little over 45 minutes. Do you want to touch anything else while we're here? I guess we can... test the waters and see if we get complaints about going too long.
Well, there is kind of actually in that same realm of what we were talking about, the issue. I was having a discussion with someone about taxes and this whole debt ceiling, the whole Bush era tax cuts for the wealthy, and they were very upset about the fact that there were tax cuts for the wealthy. They thought that if, you know, the middle class is taxed, that the wealthy ought to also be taxed. And I kind of pointed out that just because I'm being robbed doesn't mean that I need somebody else to be robbed as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't make it not fair for you not to get robbed while I'm getting robbed.
Right. Well, there's a desire when you're being brutalized by the state and you're having your money taken, you're having the product of your own labor stolen from you like that, there's a desire to, you know, you don't want to see somebody else get away with not getting robbed. But at the same time, that mentality comes from the constant, since we were tiny little kids, constantly being taught socialist principles. From one of my articles that I did talks about the evil teacher that goes into the classroom and sees one child with gum, and assaults that child and says, hey, you know, do you have, is that gum? And the little girl says, yes, it's gum. And the teacher says, do you have enough gum for everybody? And she says, no, I don't have enough gum for everybody. Then the teacher makes her spit out her gum.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this instills into all the other children envy.
Yeah.
It teaches children envy. It teaches them to not only to want something someone else has, but want it so bad that you, if you can't have it, you don't want them to have it.
Yeah.
That's a level of envy that that the state teaches us from the youngest ages that is pure evil.
Yes.
It's there's a German word similar to it, but I don't know how to pronounce it, so I'm not going to.
Schadenfreude?
Something like that. Yeah. But it's the
desire
for someone else. It's taking pleasure in someone else being harmed. And it's really, it's based on a level of envy that's very dangerous. It's in the article I wrote, I think it's the same article. I don't know because I've written so many. But when Cain killed Abel, in the story of Cain and Abel, you have Abel having made a sacrifice to God that God approved of. And Cain, his sacrifice was not approved of. And rather than letting Abel live with his success, Cain killed Abel, not because Abel harmed him in any way or took anything from him, but he would rather have him dead than have him have the approval that Cain couldn't get. That's a level of envy. Well, of course, you know, we're not killing anybody here, but still it's the principle involved. That's a level of envy that evil dwells upon.
And I can understand it. It's very frustrating to have corporations and individuals who are, you know, rich enough to not pay taxes, and it feels like they're getting special favor from the government simply because they're rich, and they are, and I can understand why that would breed envy, but at the same time, that is an emotion that really needs to be controlled.
Right. Because if you look at the root of the problem, what's the root of the problem? Is the root of the problem that let me give an example, because I'll just name this guy for who he is. Jeff Immelt is the CEO of General Electric. General Electric is a massive company. They make everything from jet engines and the machinery that operates the minigun. If you know what a minigun is, it's that thing in the first Terminator or the second Terminator music where second Terminator movie where he shot the cop car and cut it in half with his with his rotary machine gun. It's like a rotary, it's like a Gatling, like electric Gatling gun. Anyway, that's GE technology right there. That's, you know, we make good things. What was that slogan they had? We bring good things to life. Anyway, GE makes everything from that to these squiggly light bulbs that we're forced to have, to washing machines and toasters, and General Electric is everywhere and everything. The CEO of General Electric is Jeff Immelt. Jeff Immelt is a longtime Republican that happens to be on the president's council or on the president's advisory board or something like that. He works out of the White House with President Obama. Isn't that nice? And it just so happens it was a big headline that GE didn't pay any income tax last year. Wasn't that nice? GE literally made billions off of the U.S. government. Billions of American tax dollars went into the pockets of GE, and GE didn't pay any taxes. And it was all legal. Isn't that nice? And then Jeff Immelt comes on and says publicly, business needs to give the government a break and stop beating up the government. Well, that's easy for Jeff Immelt to say. Well, he's having lunch with the president and not paying taxes. But the problem is not GE. The problem is not Jeff Immelt. And the problem is not even Obama. The problem is that the state creates corporations and creates these levels of envy and creates these tax loopholes for the purpose of causing envy. so that there is a hatred of the rich, and the rich look down on the poor. Mm-hmm. They do this on purpose. The state does this on purpose. It's how the state keeps us in control.
Yep.
So the problem is not GE. The problem is not Jeff Immelt. The problem is not Obama. The problem wasn't Bush before. The problem is the hideous, dirty, greasy, slobbering monster sitting in the corner that everybody wants to ignore. It's the state.
Yep.
The state created this problem. The state perpetuates the problem.
Yep.
And the state is evil.
And I think, you know, it's an issue of, this is, if you were in a situation where you were, let's say, in a bank, and the bank got robbed,
mm-hmm.
and the bank robber is there saying, give me your wallet.
And he doesn't notice the ring on the old lady's finger that's off on the side.
Right. You know, you pointing out, that lady's richer than I am. That mm-hmm. take her money. You're not taking any of her money.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to not take your money to take her money.
Exactly.
They're going to take your money. Now, whether they take her money or not is immaterial.
It's none of your business.
It doesn't affect you.
Right. Because you're getting robbed either way.
You're going to have that money taken from you.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you care if other people don't pay taxes? That doesn't affect you any.
Right.
The only thing that affects you is how much you're being stolen from. And we should all try to pay the least amount of taxes possible. We should all try to take as much money as possible away from the state. We should all try to lessen the amount of money that the state is able to take.
All the time following the zero aggression principle, mm-hmm. not defrauding anyone,
yep.
and not using aggression on anyone.
Yep.
So we're not saying steal from the state, and we're not saying defraud the state. We're saying simply take as much as you can in whatever method that you can.
Mm-hmm.
If that means, you know, driving on free roads, if that means using the free mail service, if that means selling stuff to the DEA, if that means taking deductions on your taxes that are written into the code, then that's what you do. Mises, you know, talks about human action. Everything is based on human action. A human, a sane person, we're assuming a sane person in any scenario like this, will make choices based on what they perceive as best for their situation.
Mm-hmm.
So Jeff Immelt or any other investor in GE is going to want GE to make the best choices possible so that they can have the best return possible.
Mm-hmm.
So their individual actions are not immoral in the sense that all they're trying to do is take the best action for their situation.
Right.
So if we blame the individual, or if we blame the individuals working in a corporation or whatever, then we're doing exactly what the state wants us to do.
Yep.
We're taking the blame and putting it on the wrong person.
Right.
Instead of recognizing that the blame belongs in the existence of the state and its puppet corporations.
Because when you get to the heart of the matter, the issue, especially for the middle class, is not that, you know, GE doesn't pay taxes. It's that you're being forced to pay taxes.
Right.
That's where the injustice comes from. That's where the anger comes from. It comes from looking at your paycheck and seeing such a huge portion being removed and forcibly taken from you.
Yeah.
That's where that anger comes from. And you need to direct that anger at where it belongs, not let it go towards a straw man figure.
Right.
You need to say, I am angry because I am being stolen from.
Right.
Not because those people are not being stolen from.
Right. And it is a straw man. It's the same way with if you talk about the welfare recipient,
mm-hmm.
and you start blaming the welfare recipient, you're angry at the welfare recipient. But all they're doing is making choices based on the situation that they're facing.
Yep.
They're making the best choices that they believe are going to result in the best actions for them. And sadly, if you were in a similar situation, now I know a lot of people who will say, "Well, I'd never take welfare. I'd never take this." Well, maybe you wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But at some point, that person who is receiving that welfare, if you had walked all those miles in their shoes, maybe you might have a different,
right,
a different view of that situation. But either way, blaming them for what the state is doing, blaming them for the situation the state created, blaming them because welfare exists,
right?
You're attacking the straw man. You need to go and find the true evil and attack him.
Right.
So, and we hit our 1 hour mark.
So, longest podcast to date.
Record.
Let us know if, we went too long or not. Yeah, long
complain.
Enough
or... Complain or compliment us or, something. Just drop an email and just say, hey, we're listening, mm-hmm, and we'll appreciate it. We might even say hi back.
Yep.
This is Ben.
And I'm Kai.
We're badquaker.com, and this is badquaker.com podcast. We appreciate you listening, and we hope to... Well, we're not going to see you next week. Oh, we went through this last week,
didn't we? We did. We hope to talk to you next week.
We hope you listen to us next week. So until next Wednesday. Goodbye, folks.